I'd like to call the meeting to order. For those of you who may not know me, I'm Representative Maury Lanning, and filling in for our chair, Paul Marquardt, who was not able to be here today. And as a resident of his neighboring city, I guess we're extending some neighborhood hospitality here, and I appreciate that.
The good old days.
All right. members will recall at our last meeting we had a budget printout, one page on both sides, that listed all the house tax aids and credits, sort of the budget for this committee, so to speak. And I would encourage you to pull that out for our discussion today and have it with you. If you don't have it, we may have some extra copies. But the plan was to have our staff go through and give us some more information about the various elements of our budget. And we have a presentation that has been put together by House Research and will be delivered by Kathy Schill from our House Fiscal Staff. And I would encourage people in the audience, there are handouts of the slides that are being shown in the back if you would want to get that. And we'll make sure that any member who's not able to be with us today has gets a personal delivery of this handout, because this is some very important information that staff has put together for us. That would be very helpful to us as we meet the challenge of what our budget is, recommendation is going to be as a committee. So with that, Michelle, if you would go ahead and proceed. And I would encourage you to ask questions along the way rather than waiting until the end. Other House staff will be here and to fill in where Michelle may not have all the information that is needed. And we're going to try to keep moving on this so that we can get through it all. And so we're going to try to avoid getting in too much detail so we get bogged down, but we certainly want to make sure everybody's questions get answered as we go through the process. So, Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Kathy Schell. I'm with House Fiscal Analysis, and my job is to go over the spreadsheet, provide you a little bit more background, and enhance the understanding of the general fund spending found on the spreadsheet for fiscals 10 and 11. My analysis begins at the committee level, moves to five categories within tax aids and credits, and then highlights specific programs. I'll be using two types of graphs to help demonstrate the magnitude of spending, both historic and for the upcoming biennium. Historic spending is reflected in a number of line graphs, which incorporate a decade of spending from and then the November forecast for 2010 through 2013. The pie chart of spending categories will be familiar. It's the same one that I presented to this committee just 2 weeks ago. Since there are 31 spending items on the spreadsheet, and the chair already pointed out the spreadsheet that we'll be using for this discussion, this analysis groups similar items together, and you'll find on that spreadsheet that there are title kind of categories. And the presentation will then highlight some of the more spendy budget activities. If you have questions, let me know, and if I can't answer them, I'll be glad to pass it on to one of my colleagues. So let's begin with the overview of tax aids and credits. This is kind of where I left off. The November forecast tells us general fund spending is projected to be $36.7 billion, and of that amount, $3.4 billion, or about 9.4%, is the tax aids and credits budget. Last time I also mentioned it's on par with the higher ed budget, and there are only two other committees that have greater spending, and that's the K-12 education budget and Health and Human Services. This is a reach back, is what I'll call it, from fiscal 00 to 01 to the present. So you can take a general snapshot viewpoint of what the general fund looked like about 10 years ago, compared to now, what the tax aids and credits budget looked about 10 years ago compared to now, and the percentage of general fund spending. Now, I will tell you that these figures, and I'll move on to the next chart, these figures include just basic information that House Fiscal Analysis has provided during each biennium. Line items have come and gone since that time. We created a general statewide property tax. A number of things have happened since this time, but this is just meant to take a snapshot at a look at the level of spending and where we are with tax aids and credits. As I mentioned before, we're taking a look at 31 budget activities, categories of expenditure, and you can find it both in this presentation and on the spreadsheet, include property tax refunds, local government aids, it's really local property tax aids, property tax credits, local pension aids, and other appropriations. And this is the base graph pie chart that I used last time around, basically showing you the pieces of the pie. I've taken the six most spending programs, put them in color in this presentation, and then lumped everything else in this category called other. You can see the PTR, major property tax credits, represent 16.7% of the budget. Going clockwise down the pie chart, you have this big clump of aids that's almost 51% of our total spending. Moving back up to about 11 o'clock, you can see tax aids and credits, tax credits, that portion of the budget is 16.7. Oh, PTR was 28% or so, I misspoke. And then the other category is about 4.5% of the overall budget. And before we break down into some of these categories, it's and that kind of turned out different, didn't it? Who receives tax aids and credits? Basically, our property tax refunds. Are those payments going directly to homeowners and to renters? For property tax aids, you've got local taxing jurisdictions and then mostly counties and eligible cities. So there's a caveat there. And then property tax credits to local taxing jurisdictions. And this is a list that you've seen before of the 31 items. It corresponds to the items on the spreadsheet, but it's just a neat single-page place to see all of the accounts that we have. We'll start off with property tax refunds. Yes.
Yeah, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed this is the first time I've seen this. The political contribution refund program is actually classified under this this committee's jurisdiction.
Yes.
Michelle.
And do you have and Mr. Chairman and the testifier, do you have an approximation on the biennial cost of that program?
I do, and I'm getting to it right in this next category of tax refunds.
This is why I should wait. Thank you.
But what I will do, you can peruse while we approach this category, but the political contribution refund is on line 7 of the spreadsheet. And we will go to tax refunds, which are lines 1 through 8 on your spreadsheet. And it reflects six different budget activities. Homeowner property tax refund, renter property tax refund, targeting property tax refund. And you'll notice that in the presentation I have a dotted line separating the two. I'll get to that in a minute. Sustainable forest land credits, political contribution refund, and tax refund interest. The first three of these categories have an overall spending impact on our overall budget of 27.9%. The three below the line have an impact of 1.7%. So it's pretty obvious where most of the money is being spent. This, beginning with number one, with the homeowner property tax refund, this budget activity is known as a circuit breaker and provides direct payments to homeowners based on their property taxes relative to income. Yeah, it's based on income. And what I'd like to do, and I'll do with each item that we go through, is that if I have the information, who benefits and how much do they benefit? For this one, for example, in calendar year 07, the year for which we have the most recent information, 263,000 homeowners received an average refund of $590. For calendar year 2009, maximum income for eligibility for this program is $100,010. Moving next to the property tax refund for renters, this is the renter's credit. It provides direct payments to renters, and this is also based on their income and their implicit property taxes. And to tell you how many benefited, once again, in calendar year 2007, 283,500 renters had an average refund of $535. For 2009, maximum income for this particular program is $59,950. Going to the third item, and then I will regroup these and show you in the line graph that I mentioned that I would show you, is a property tax refund. This refund is provided to homeowners regardless of income. The first two were income-based and in relation to the amount of property taxes that they paid. This one is regardless of income. When there's a relatively large one-year increase that's greater than 12%, up to a maximum of $1,000. In calendar year 05, 87,500 homeowners received an average refund of $85. And this is the graph that I'm talking about with 10 years of experience. You can see how the homeowner PTR has increased from less than $100,000, and this is on an annual basis, so you've got really more than 10 years when you include the estimated amounts of spending that were included in the November forecast. You have homeowner PTR starting at less than $100 million as an expenditure, growing to, in fiscal 2010, almost $285 million. The second line that you see with the renter PTR, it started at over $100 million in the year 2000, and right now is approximately $175 million for 2010. And then both of those, once again, are income-based programs. The solid line that's floating at the bottom of the chart is the targeting PTR, and that's the one that is dependent regardless of income because you had a big chunk of increase in your property tax taxes to pay, and that's where that spending is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Schilling. There's quite a difference in the slope between the homeowner PTR and the renter PTR, and is that primarily due to rapidly increasing maximums in state law over that period of time, or is it really just a disparate climb in the property taxes on those two?
It's a combination of items that go into the calculation of the PTR. You have income levels, you have your tax liability, you have thresholds, and so it's a combination of those things. And I might turn to Ms. Manzi if she has further information on why that line is a little bit flatter than what we've experienced in the homeowner PTR.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, in the homeowner PTR, there have been several law changes to make the program extend to higher income levels and to have more generous parameters with regard to who is eligible over that time period. I know there was a significant program expansion, I think, in the 2001 tax bill and also last year in the 2008 tax bill, and there may have been another expansion in between. Mr. Hines is nodding, which means that he thinks so, too. So that's, I think, a big reason why the homeowner line climbs upward so steeply there compared to the renter line. I don't think we've made any significant changes to the renter program since the late 1990s.
While we're on this renter PTR, maybe if one or both of you would talk about what the Revenue Department will be providing us in terms of an analysis of what percent of rents across the state are considered to be property tax related, and what the actuals are and that. Can you comment on that for members of the committee?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what's in statute for renters is that their property taxes are assumed to equal 19% of the rent that they paid in the previous year. In past years, the Department of Revenue has done analysis of different regions of the state and different size apartment unit buildings to find out what percentage of rent paid is actually property taxes that are passed through to the renters by the landlord. Because the rent does include the property tax, so the landlord has to pay the property tax and he gets the money to do that from the tenants. But it varies by region and it varies by the size of the units. If it's a duplex or if it's a multi-unit building or a fourplex, I think Representative Loeffler did some work on this last year. This is not something that the Department of Revenue is charged with doing in statute. I think we can probably expect to see something like that from them, but I don't know that we specifically requested that, and I don't know that they're planning to, but like I said, I won't be surprised if it appears this session.
Thank you.
One other thing I might add, Mr. Chair, is that there is a summary of all the changes that were done in last year's budget bill available on the web through House Fiscal Analysis, and I know there are other sheets available too through House Research that provides more detail on it, on changes as they have gone from one biennium to the next. And my analysis on this does include the changes that we ended up doing to the law. So it's and that has been reflected in the 2008 November forecast. And so if anyone wants to research that more fully, it is available online. Okay. Moving to the three items on property tax refunds that were below that dotted line, these three represent about 1.7% of the overall spending in our budget. The first is sustainable forest land credits. This is a credit to reimburse counties for property tax relief to private homeowners who practice long-term forest management investment, and that's the Sustainable Forest Act. Who benefits approximately, and I couldn't get a number on individual owners and parcels, but I was able to identify the number of acres that were enrolled in the program, which is over 700,000. And the average amount this year, and this amount is determined by the Commissioner of Revenue, to be $8.61 per acre for each acre enrolled. And if you recall, we just changed that law. It was in 07, I believe, where that calculation, it was available at three different options. And right now, the way it's calculated is now through the Commissioner of Revenue using a set of parameters. And please note, this is one of the fastest growing expenditure programs in the state. The 2007 Budget Activities Catalog had this identified. It was a letter from the Department of Finance at that time, now MMB, had a list of about 10 items, and this is the one out of all the line items that we had in our budget that showed up on the list showing percentage growth greater than 15%. And I can tell you that in 10 through 13, it will continue to grow that way given existing law. Political contribution refunds. This is with respect to Representative Garofalo's question. This program allows a taxpayer to claim a refund equal to the amount of the taxpayer's contributions in the calendar year to candidates or a political party. There is a limit on it. Individuals, $50. Couple filing jointly, a maximum of $100. In calendar year 2005, almost 100,000 individuals received an average refund of about $50. And the final item in this category is the tax refund interest. This account pays for interest expenses on overpayment refunded or credited to taxpayer from the date of the payment of the tax until the date the refund is credited. Now, once again, here's the magic chart. Note the sale on this chart is significantly different than the other line graph. The maximum here is 25
million were the other graph, and I can go back to it real quickly if you'd like, but you can see that this is a very small, let me see if I can do this. The scale here goes from 0 to 350 million. If I place this other chart into this chart, it would not even make it up to the $50 million line. So these other items that we just talked about are significantly less. But this gives you an idea of what the spending patterns look like. Okay, if there are no questions, I'll move from refund programs to another piece of the pie, which is tax aids. And we'll focus this this discussion on overall tax aids, local government aid, county program aid, and there are some others. And you will find these on lines 10 through about 29 on the spreadsheet.
Just so everyone is following, the spreadsheet is this one page on both sides that we got at our last meeting. Mm-hmm. And I think there's another copy on your desk now, too. So.
Okay, so we have eight items in the category for local property tax aids. The first two, local government aid and county program aid, account for 44.3% of all the tax aids and credits budget. The remaining six count for 1.5% of the overall tax and aids budget. So let's take a look at local government aid. Local government aid provides state property tax relief to cities, and it's distributed according to need factors. This is the magic formula that we've revisited several times. Measured differently for small cities with populations of 2,500 residents or fewer versus large cities with populations over 2,500, minus the ability to pay measured by the city's tax base and taconite aid. Who benefits? Local government aid provides general purpose funding to 763 of Minnesota's 854 cities. 608 of these recipient cities have a population of less than 2,500. And if you go even further onto the next slide, we've kind of broken this out for you with some help from Ms. Dalton. Estimated 2010 LGA distributions, 90.6 million will go to that bundle of 608 cities, small cities, whereas 435.5 million will go to 155 of the large cities. And this is the only one that I took a look at, that who does this not benefit, who does not benefit from LGA. And the figures are pretty notable. Total population in townships, now in cities, is just under 1 million residents. Total population in 69 large cities and 22 small cities that don't get LGA, that population is just shy of 1.5 million. So the subtotal is 2,465,000, or about 47% of the state's overall population. And these figures are from, I believe, 06. And that's what we have the most current information for. Now, the magic graph will come in just a minute. We're going to take a look at county program aid, go over that, and then I'll show you the big impact. This budget activity provides general purpose aid to counties to reduce property tax levy based on the needs of the populations they serve relative to the size of their tax base. In 2003, and this program has gone through there have been a number of programs that have existed prior to county program aid, and this is the end result of some of the changes that occurred in 2003. There was a consolidation of general purpose aids into this program, and counties previously received a number of different aids, including homestead and agricultural credit aid, HACA, the criminal justice aid, family preservation aid, and the machinery aid item. Appropriations payable for calendar year 2009 and annually thereafter are limited to $111.5 million for the need aid portion and $116 million for the equalization aid portion of the formula. And one other thing, in the overall appropriation for county program aid, there is a carve-out, is the way I'll call it,
$500,000 is retained by the Commissioner of Revenue to pay for public defender costs pursuant to statute. I think this, too, is a carryover from when we did the consolidation kind of thing. This is a place to put this particular need. Who benefits? All 87 counties. And once again, we'll revisit the formulas. Need aid tends to be distributed among the counties, approximately equal to each county's relative share of their population, excuse me, of the state population. Counties in Greater Minnesota generally receive a greater share of the tax-based equalization aid because their tax bases are generally smaller. Okay, so we're going to take a look at the chart again. Once again, we're looking at the scale, 0 to 600 million. The dotted line is 10 years plus of spending of LGA, and the red line that you see closer to the bottom of the graph is the county program aid. And since I was not with this committee before 2004, if there are questions associated with what existed prior to the consolidation, I might turn to some of my colleagues. Okay, hearing no questions, I'll move on to those items that are below the dotted line on the overall list for this category. County transition aid. This aid is provided to certain counties to buffer the reductions in aid attributed to that consolidation that I talked about earlier. Who benefits? There are seven counties in particular, and you've got them listed here. Aiken, Chippewa, Cook, Kennebec, Kitson, Traverse, and Wilkins. This is a small item, less than $500,000 per year. Utility transition aid. This is an item that might sound familiar to members that were with the tax committee last year. State aid provided to 14 cities and 29 counties where utility property rule changes resulted in a reduction in tax capacity that was greater than 4%. During fiscal years 10 and 11, the program covers 50% of the excess loss, and in 2011, 100%. Number five, public defender costs and local impact notes. This budget activity represents set-aside monies from the county program aid for public defense services, for correctional facility inmates, and also annual funding of up to $207,000 for the Commissioner of Finance and up to $7,000 for the Commissioner of Education to pay for administrative costs associated with producing local fiscal impact notes on legislation considered by the Minnesota Legislature.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a quick question on the utility transition aid. Is that sunset after fiscal year 2011, or is it just 100% ongoing after that?
It's 100% ongoing after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Schilling, I wasn't aware of the payments for fiscal note preparation. And does the Commissioner of Finance, to your knowledge, share that with other state agencies like the Department of Human Services or the Department of Health or the Department of Corrections for the cost that they have?
Michelle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, to my knowledge, no. But what I can tell you, they have this earmark, but they have very rarely used much of it. So the Commissioner of Finance, even though there's $207,000 reserved for them for the local impact note, what I end up seeing being appropriated compared to what actual spending is in that item, it's usually not fully spent. So to answer your question, then, do they actually go back and share this money with agencies? I don't think so. But if there's someone from MMB who might have additional information, I'd be all ears to hear it.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative
Just to follow up, if we do get some follow-up information, if you'd be willing to look into that, I'd be interested because I know other committees have had real challenges with getting timely fiscal notes on that kind of basis, and if they're not using it, I'm sure others maybe could use an incentive to actually respond sometime.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, this is, I think we need a clarification. This is not for fiscal notes. This is for local impact notes, where a piece of legislation may very well not have any state impact at all, but actually transcends to the counties. And so what has been discussed in the past with Department of Finance is that to gather information that might not exist, especially through state agencies, that the department has to go beyond to local government entities to get information, and that's why this money is available. So it's the local impact notes, not the fiscal note process.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks for the clarification. Representative Mulroy.
Chair, just on that point, Michelle, is this money that they send to the local then for the time preparing it, or
that is
I wouldn't think they'd get $207,000 for sending an email requesting something from the local or whatever.
No? I have not heard any feedback on how that money would be shared. Once again, I'd look at the spending pattern, and very rarely has it been used. So we'll take it. I can certainly inquire and give you some feedback from that.
Ellen Chesky.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but I was just, you probably saw me consulting with someone who formerly worked in that area but no longer works in that area, and in fact works for a different level of government. And I think it would be worth the committee's time to get the information on that, because I think they do use that money, and I think we need a better understanding of where that money really goes, because they are, people think that money doesn't get used, and it does get used. And I think Representative Loeffler is one of many members who have thought there should be a better way to get these impact notes timely to more people. But we don't have, from what I can tell in the audience, anyone who can actually answer that question today. But people who are very knowledgeable about it, who I think are confused as well. So if you know, down the road, if we could get that, I think it would be helpful.
Okay. So noted. Mr. Cummings?
Yep.
Michelle.
Okay. I think we're done with questions for number 5, so we'll go to number 6, which is disparity reduction aid. This budget activity, created in 1988, reflects state aid paid to counties, townships, and school districts to provide relief for high tax rate areas. Number 7, tribal casino aid, reflects state aid payments to counties with a tribal casino. The state pays 10% of the state's share of excise taxes collected under the tribal tax agreement. Because the tribal government receives one half of the taxes collected, the county in effect receives 5% of these shared taxes. And who benefits? Counties with one of the 17 casinos currently operating in Minnesota. Number 8 is Minoman aid. This also is an item that might be familiar to members of this committee from last year. This is aid provided to Minoman local governments and to school districts to mitigate removal of tribal property in a litigation case in 2006, which took the property off the county's tax rolls.
Carolyn Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know, or is staff, can someone from staff tell us, and I have no idea, is the, and just trying to think through all the cuts will have to take place, is the number 7, is that something that the legislature can cut, or is that sort of the sovereign nation compact sort of a situation, or is that an optional one where the legislature can provide that aid, and can they take it back unilaterally? I mean, I always wonder.
Any staff have an answer to that?
I don't know. Mr. Chair, Representative Lynchowski, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that the department enters into these agreements with the tribes. And I don't know how long the agreements are for. It could be when the agreements expire and they have to renew them. But I would think that you'd have to go back into the agreements to see what they are. I know Mark Peterson over at the Department of Revenue, I think, is the one that we'll have to, you know, do some checking with and see what kind of agreements are have been made with the state and the tribal casinos.
Mr. Chair, thank you for a follow-up. I think both the minority and majority members need all the information they can as they try to come up with their plans. And I think in all of these, it's just helpful to know if there's something that you can't legally cut, you probably should know what it is. And I would think this wouldn't be one of them, but it just occurred to me because I know all members of the tax committee are going to be trying to think this all through. And it'd be great if we could just find that out.
So is that a yes to volunteering on that, Ms. Baker, that you will get that answer?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Lenchewski, we will check into that to see whether or not this is one that we have any option to cut.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the question. Michelle, going back, maybe you could help members by explaining the difference between the spreading reduction aid school and non-school. And how that works?
On the spreadsheet, you'll see a number of items that have the separation of school and non-school, mostly in the aids and credits portion, so those two major categories. And I'm looking at Mr. Hines, who can give some additional detail, but what I will tell you is that the presentation on the spreadsheet follows the information that is passed to us in the forecast where MMB has split these two items out. And it's based on when the payments go out. I think it makes it easier for them to identify the school aid, which goes out a certain time of the year, versus the non-school aid that goes out at a different time of year. But I will defer to Mr. Hines to provide additional information on that.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct. The Department of the Disparity Reduction Aid computation was really the same for schools and other jurisdictions, but we mandate that the aids paid to school districts go through the Department of Education, and part of that payout process involves a program that you frequently hear referred to as metering, where it's given to districts on an as-needed basis throughout the course of the school year, kind of based on their budgetary situation or their fund balance, whereas the payments to other local governments go out on the same schedule as the aid payments, the twice a year. So, and because of that, I think the Department of Finance chooses to track them as two different lines, and we sort of picked that up in this presentation.
So as I understand it, it's not a different aid. It's the same aid. It's just the timing with which it is dispensed.
That's correct. And obviously the entity that works.
That receives it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Shaw, I remember all the reason for the Monoman aid, but does that continue permanently or indefinitely? Or
we have that continuing throughout the forecast as it's currently reflected on the sheet, yes.
So legally, how long is it set for?
I'm looking at Ms. Felton right now. Legally, I would say indefinitely. Is that fair to say?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mullery, originally that language was passed as a temporary basis, but last year it was made permanent.
I remember in the past the tax committee having to approve it each biennium, but now we don't unless the law has changed again. So. Proceed.
Okay, we will move on to, once again, the line graph, and this will definitely show you the trends in spending and compared to the overall budget, how most of these categories are. The scale is 0 to 30 million, and the top one that you see floating from about 25 million to just shy of 20 million is the disparity reduction aid, and the rest are very much at the low levels of the chart. Moving on, let's go to the tax credits portion of the budget and that category, what it includes, not only the tax credits, but there are some lines that are in the other category. So I accentuated both pieces of the pie for that reason. And here's a list of the eight tax credits that show up on our spreadsheet. The top two, once again, above the dotted line, market value homestead credit and the agricultural market value credit. They comprise 16.7% of all tax aids. And then you go to the other six that lie below the line, and they are 0.5% of our overall budget. Starting off with the market value homestead credit, this budget activity provides reimbursements to local districts for property tax credits issued to residential homeowners. Homeowners may receive tax credits equal to 0.4% of the market value of the parcel, up to a maximum of $304, subject to the phase out at the beginning at $76,000 in market value. The phase out rate is equal to 0.09% of the market value above $76,000, with no credit for homes with a value of $414,000 and above. Few benefits from the market value homestead credit. The average credit was $210 for homes in Greater Minnesota and $141 for homes in the metro area. And once again, these are going back to taxing jurisdictions, not to any individual, although individuals do see that show up on their property tax statement. Agricultural market value credit. This budget activity reflects reimbursements to localities for property tax credits issued to owners of agricultural property, minus the value of the house, garage, and 1 acre of land. Applicants receive tax credits equal to 0.3% of the market value, up to a max of $345. Once again, there is a phase back of the credit beginning at $115,000 in market value. The phase back rate equal to 0.05% of market value above $115,000 reduces the credit amount to a maximum of $230 for farms valued at $345,000 or more. And here's the chart. This is what these two programs look like. The scale is from 0 to $350 million for annual expenditures, and the residential market value homestead credit is the dotted line, and the agricultural market value credit is the solid line close to the bottom of the chart. And reflected on the spreadsheet, these are the two items, the first found on line 34, which is the residential market value credit, and line 38 for the agricultural market value credit. Going on to the items that are below the line, the border city disparity credit. This credit provides reimbursement for property tax credits issued to qualified commercial industrial properties located in an enterprise zone. Who benefits? Five designated border cities: Breckenridge, Dilworth, East Grand Forks, Moorhead, and Ortonville. The disaster credit is item number four. This reflects reimbursement for property tax credits to counties within a disaster or an emergency area. Specifically, counties must readjust property valuations to reflect damages and other losses in market value caused by the event, creating a void in anticipated property tax revenues for the year. Wetlands reimbursement credit. Counties receive payments for lost revenue resulting from the exemption of land in a wetlands reservation or preservation area. Payments are based on the tax revenue that would have been received if the wetlands had a net tax capacity of 50 cents per acre. Senior deferral reimbursement, also something familiar to members of the committee. Eligible seniors age 65 and older with an income of $60,000 or less may defer a portion of their property taxes that exceeds 3% of their household income to a later time. The state pays the amount of the deferred tax plus other charges to the county where the property is located. In 2006, and I believe that's a calendar year figure, we have over 130 seniors participated in this program. And a greater emphasis for advertisement of this program happened since 2006. And so I'll be interested to see some updated figures on what lies in the forecast for that. Item 7, bovine tuberculosis property tax credit. Once again, an item from last year's budget. This property tax credit is for agricultural land located in the modified bovine tuberculosis accredited zone. If the property owner eradicated a cattle herd on that land during the year in order to prevent the onset or spread of bovine tuberculosis, the state is required to reimburse taxing districts for taxes lost under this credit. Food benefits, and this is right from the estimate that we had based for the budget decision. Approximately 300 farms in the defined area with a net loss of about $1,227 per farm. And number 8, prior year credits. This is a catch-all line because not all credits happen in a timely basis in that 12-month period for fiscal years. We have carryover for a number of different reasons. And so I took a look at the chart that is underlying here. You probably see every single credit that could possibly have some sort of issue be reflected in this item. This activity accounts for reimbursements to a variety of credits that are attributable to previous year tax liabilities. And as a sidebar for this in this area in particular, we've got two items, taconite relief aids and credits. The first is supplemental taconite homestead credits for school and non-school, and you can see that on item lines 53 through 56 of the spreadsheet. This budget activity provides reimbursements to schools and local governments in the Iron Range for tax credits issued under the Homestead Property Tax Relief Program. And the taconite replacement aid provides state aid in the amount equal to 22 cents per taxable ton of iron ore concentrates per production year to local governments in the Iron Range to replenish their taconite municipal aid accounts. Overall, these two items represent 0.8% of the overall aids and credits. And this is what those items look like. When I take a look at the scale on this, it's 0 to 14 million, and you have a wide range of what's going on here. Done, 3 to go. Local pension aids, and we're obviously falling to the smaller parts of the budget now. The piece of pie for local pension aids is about 9 o'clock or so. And totals $214 million of our overall budget. Once again, we have 6 items here for local pension aids. The first two are the more spendy of all of them. Age, police, and fire, which is actually a combination of a number of programs. I'll get to that in a minute. And the Public Employees Retirement Association. Those two items reflect 6.1% of overall tax aid and credit spending. And the other 4 represent 0.2% of the overall budget. Aid to police and fire, and of these items, I'm going to highlight just the first two. Provides aid to police and fire is a combination of about 3 different programs, and I've got them bullet pointed here, plus a small administrative fee done by the state auditor. Provides payments to certain counties, municipalities, independent nonprofit, firefighting corporations, and other entities to supplement their budgets. The allocation of state fire aid uses population and market value information in each service area to determine a minimal amount of aid per firefighter. The allocation of state police aid is based on the number of licensed police officers employed by the entity up to an amount for the employer's prior year pension contribution. And the surcharge item component of this is the allocation of first class city fire insurance surcharge is the geographic location of the property on which the fire insurance is written. Fire aid comes from the dedicated proceeds of the state insurance premiums tax, generally 2% on fire insurance. Police state aid is financed by the dedicated proceeds of a 2% automobile insurance premiums tax. The Public Employees Retirement Association. This budget activity reflects payments to each county, city, town, and other non-school jurisdictions to offset a 1997 employer contribution increase. And this is how the payments are calculated, and there is no statutory provision that determines this aid. And actually, that piece of information came from Larry Martin of the Pension Commission and is different than what we actually see in line 60 of the spreadsheet, where the forecast has zeroed out. Excuse me, 67. No, this is line 67. Line 60 is another item I'll get to in a moment. But line 60, the zero in the spreadsheet is likely to be inaccurate, and I've taken that right from the forecast, so there's some questions to ask there. This is the combination of both of those two programs. The scale is 0 to 120 million, with the dotted line representing aid to police and fire, and the more dashed kind of line is the Public Employees Retirement Association payment. And the next item basically gives you a summary. Because we're taking a look at pension aids, I did this 2 years ago, just completed an update of this line earlier today, of local pension aids. Where in the budget do we assist with aids for the purpose of pensions? And you can see that most of it is reflected in our budget as opposed to in the state government budget. And this is the number that I've combined that is all contained in the November forecast going forward. These are those items. And the presentation I always thought that there was more money in other budgets, more so than in our budgets. And felt that this was a pretty telling summary of where the monies are and how much we've been spending. And then finally, the other expenditure item. We've covered a number of the other expenditures as I've gone through the discussion of the individual categories, but what usually falls in the other piece of the pie, so to speak, are direct appropriations with a tax-related purpose, usually to a state agency or local government, and usually administrative in nature. So what you see at the very bottom of our spreadsheet on line 70, you see PILT, which is payment in lieu of taxes for the Department of Transportation-owned land. We have a very small amount that we provide there, $9,000 per year. And there are various other one-time appropriations that kind of come and go as needed. And what you see on the spreadsheet on page 73 is the disaster relief from 07. That was the fires up in the Boundary Waters area, mainly. But we've had flooding aid. It's those kinds of disaster relief funds. Also, last session might come to mind the Beltrami County out-of-placement home aids. That was a one-time thing. We had a $500,000 expenditure. And then the other part, which we actually appropriated in our budget that ends up showing up elsewhere, actually in state government's budget as the forecast has gone forward, is support for the VOS database. So you'll see things appropriated by this committee, and then once they are implemented, they go where they need to go. And that basically makes it through the spreadsheet. I always try to do, at the very bottom of the spreadsheet, you see this quick summary. Try to keep things aligned in categories where the biggest amount of spending occurs so you can have kind of a comparison along the way, and that's what lines 78 through 84 actually do. So you can take a look at what refunds are doing pretty quickly without having to go someplace else on the spreadsheet. Also, major aid and credits, and then some of the smaller ones. So that's meant to be a tool to help you. I believe, and the last thing, if you have more questions or you don't remember things from this presentation, I'll once again mention that the catalog of budget activities gives you a quick thumbnail sketch of what's going on. You won't get as much information because I went all the way back a decade, but here you go to 06 and bring it out to 2013. For individual items that you might want to look up pretty quickly. And that is also available online.
Representative Gutner.
Mr. Chair and Justifier, the Minneapolis TRA, that was rolled into the state TRA. So are we still giving payments to the Minneapolis TRA account?
We are, and for some background on that, because the pension areas, I've been watching the spending, and I get that information, but Larry Martin from the Pension Commission is here, and if you want to have a better idea of why we still have that in our budget compared to other areas of the budget, or why it hasn't gone away since 1997, that would be a perfect question for him.
Yeah, Mr. Martin. Come on down. Please identify yourself for the tape, too, if you would.
I'm Larry Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions. We're a joint legislative entity. It's been around about 40 years, and we handle the first look at public pension bills for the state legislature. The question had to do with the Minneapolis teacher aid. There are a couple of Minneapolis teacher aids. One in 1993 was the creation date, the other in 1997. They survived the consolidation of the Minneapolis teachers plan in the TRA, but they are payable to TRA to offset some of the cost of consolidating the Minneapolis teachers. So they're still listed as MTRFA, but the actual recipient is the statewide TRA plan. Okay.
Thank you.
Other questions on pension or other parts of this summary?
Chairman, a quick question. Thank you. I guess on the going back to the tribal casino aid payment to the counties, could you just clarify, you know, those taxes, is there a statewide agreement on this? Is it a by tribal reservation agreement? I always thought that's why the cigarettes were cheaper out at Mystic Lake was because they didn't charge cigarette taxes, but maybe provide some background on that?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo there. The state has separate tribal tax agreements with all of the tribal governments except the Prairie Island band. And so they're basically this casino or this county aid that's paid to counties that have casinos in them is a sharing arrangement where a portion of the, well, let me back up a second. Under those state tribal tax agreements, basically the state taxes are all imposed within the jurisdictions of those tribal governments. But then the state shares a portion of those revenues back to the tribal government. And the formulas in all of those agreements are pretty much the same, although I don't know that they're exactly the same, but the formula more or less works that the tribe, first of all, gets a per capita allowance based on estimates of how much its members pay in those taxes, and then secondly, the remainder is divided half and half between the state and the tribal government. And so this tribal casino aid that goes to the counties is half of the state share of some of those taxes that's paid to the counties. Now, to your question about, you know, how if the state's regular cigarette excise tax is being essentially paid, how come the cigarettes are cheaper? when you purchase them on the reservation than elsewhere. And the answer to that, of course, is that there's some unity between the tribal government and these enterprises. And the state is rebating half of the tax back to the tribal government. And so then it's a business decision on the part of the tribal government as to whether they keep that money for general government operations or if they use some of that to, in effect, reduce the price that they charge on the cigarettes. That's a sort of a governmental business decision that the tribal government has the ability to make. And so, not knowing, I'm guessing that some of them, in fact, say, hey, it's in our interest because it will actually up cigarette sales and will maximize revenue by cutting our price, just like any business would make that kind of a decision. And my understanding was there was some question as to whether you could reduce the county aid, and the answer to that is yes, you could decide to reduce that for many years. That kind of aid was not paid to counties. It was initially paid to some subset of counties and then later was extended to all counties with those casinos. So that is something the legislature could decide to do. Obviously, it would hit those 17 counties or whatever subset you choose and would not affect the rest of the county.
Mr. Chairman, I am amazed at what I learn in this job every day. Thank you.
And you've got a good teacher.
That's right.
The best. Other questions? Representative Laughlin.
While he's walking back, just a further question on that for Mr. Michael, whether or not the health impact fee that was assessed on cigarettes applies to that as well?
Mr. Michael.
Ms. Chair, I'm not sure that because that was not done as a tax, it did not automatically affect those tax agreements. Those tax agreements were written so that the state excise tax got paid back. I know that as soon as that health impact fee was enacted, that was a question whether those agreements were going to be amended to include the health impact fee or not. I do not have personal knowledge. I can check with revenue to see if some or all of the agreements have been amended to include the health impact fee and to treat that like an increase in the cigarette excise tax.
Representative Mulley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Michael, could you also get somebody to, if we're not getting that, to give us an estimate of how much we're losing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulley, yes, I can inquire about that. I think, in general, because it was not subject to the tax agreement, we would be getting all of the, if it's not subject to the tax agreement, the state would be keeping all of the revenue and not sharing it with the tribal government. And so amending, and so that, you know, so that actually there was a little bit of a revenue difference if you had just increased the cigarette tax rate as opposed to imposing the separate fee that presumably would not be subject to the tax agreement. And so adding that to the tax agreements, which I know they were discussing with the tribal governments, would have an adverse revenue impact on the state, not a positive impact.
Representative Lenchewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, could Mr. Martin answer another question back on the fence made third time?
Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly wouldn't expect you to name a fire department or the police department or any group of users by name. But in just thinking to the deficit, if the legislative tax committees want to cut pension aid, because I think people kind of know that probably nothing's going to be left untouched before we get through this, what kind of questions, obviously we, you know, want to hear from the pension commission, but what kind of questions should decision makers, you know, all of us here at the table be asking to try to think through if you are trying to, you know, bring that aid down some way? What's the way to think about it? Is there information to, you know, is it across the board, everyone takes a certain percentage? Are there, I mean, certainly some funds are in dire straits and others aren't, and how would we go about trying to think through? I mean, of course, I know no one wants to cut anything, but what, how do you process it though? Because I think all, I think what the chair is doing here today is great, because it highlights for all the members all the aids and credits that are pouring out all over the state. And I think the shared sacrifice term is one people are using a lot, and that includes this too.
Ms. Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. Probably the way to go at this would be, at least the first cut in my brief, having have a brief chance to think about it. Some of these pension aids reimburse for costs that have already been incurred. Police state aid, for instance, the distribution of essentially auto casualty insurance premium tax goes to our municipalities, counties, and some other entities. It also goes to parts of state government, public safety. The Highway Patrol gets a portion of the police state aid, the University of Minnesota Police, Metro Transit stops. That is a reimbursement for last year's employer pension costs. So that would have a more stunning effect, I would think, if it was reduced. Police state aid, once upon a time, the revenue that generated that program was greater, substantially greater than the total police pension cost. And so we had a phenomenon called excess police aid. And excess police aid has been used to fund some of these smaller pension aid programs. But that is being whittled away, both a function of how fast auto insurance premium taxes increase versus how fast police salaries increase, how fast the number of police officers grow, and more importantly, how fast recent increases in the employer contribution rates to both PERA police and fire and the state patrol pension plan have grown. So there's very little excess police aid. Mostly the police aid is a direct reimbursement for last year's police costs, police pension costs, and would be more problematic than perhaps fire state aid, which it's not a reimbursement of last year's cost. There are a number of departments, they tend to be smaller departments, that have pension funds that are more than 100% funded, that frequently have pension costs less than their prior state aid. And so some minor whittling of prior state aid for those municipalities would not cause an immediate municipal tax increase. For those volunteer fire plans, principally, that have pension costs very close to their fire state aid or less than their they have pension costs greater than their fire state aid, and they have to make a municipal contribution currently, a reduction in the fire state aid would be replaced with a direct corresponding increase in local property taxes. So
thank you. A lot to think about, Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's for sure. And as I'm sitting listening to this, wondering what criteria are we going to use to evaluate that spending? And obviously, there are some pieces of that where you have really no discretion, and others where we may have some. How are we going to be able to process and really evaluate all of those? Mr. Martin, I think we need your ongoing help here, and as we look at those pension costs and what's reasonable to consider and what isn't.
I would be happy to provide any help that I can.
Thank you. Other questions? Well, Michelle, thank you very much for an excellent presentation. I know the other House research staff share in that preparation for our meeting here today, but members, I would strongly encourage you to hang on to this with your life and the spreadsheet, because we have a budget, this committee, of $3.418 billion. That's 9.4% of the state's budget, general fund budget. And if, as an example, we had to come up with 9.4% of the $4.847 billion in savings, that's $455 million.
Yep.
I mean, just as an example of what kind of challenge we might be facing. And obviously at some point, Chair Marquardt will get a target for this committee, and we're going to have to be making some evaluation and discussion and decisions regarding where we find money to match that target. Representative Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know who to ask. Somebody on staff. I just wondered a little bit about why we're considered for having the pension aids, but we don't have any control about, you know, the expenditures, or in other words, it's charged in Chair Lanchesky's budget, but I think, is it Representative Kahn that has the discretion on the other end, or?
And Representative Murphy.
Does she have this now too?
I'm not sure.
Well, if it's in this budget, there must be some control within tax committee, Representative Lanchesky.
Mr. Chair, I mean, it's the tax committee that would decide the size of the cut.
Right, but what I, Mr. Chair, let's not go through all the formalities right now, but I'm saying, yes, if we wanted to cut these, but usually the committee that has something to do with the other end of it, the expenditures or whatever.
Well, obviously at some point there will have to be appropriate discussion with the other committee or committees that have something to say about that as well. But since it's on our budget spreadsheet, I take it this committee will have to take a position on that at some point. So, so anyway, any other questions or discussion with regard to this? We have a couple other business items we need to take care of. Do you want the minutes approved?
Yes.
We have the minutes for January 7th. Representative Tilbury, I hear you making the motion. Any additions or corrections to the minutes of January 7th? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Minutes are approved. And Representative Dietrich, do you have something you wish to say?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also would like to thank Ms. Schill for an excellent presentation, and now that she has laid the groundwork for this committee, Representative Lanning also provided another piece of framework as if how are we going to approach this, and I think you provided some an excellent point is what kind of criteria are we going to use in order to figure out how we would reduce the deficit. But Representative Marquardt asked me to relay a message to everybody and what you should be thinking about, and I think that question that we just laid out by Representative Lanning is a good one. What criteria would you use in order to identify cost reductions, and which cost reductions or which areas of this tax aids and credits would you either like to work on, or would you like to look at reducing in some form or another? So it's kind of the what next, and Representative or Chair Marquardt will be meeting with each one of you individually to ask your priorities, possibly what areas would you like to work on, and ideas for criteria for cost reductions. So that's my announcement. So if you could all be thinking about that now that we have the framework there, that would be great.
Thank you. I think he has in mind asking for volunteers to work on certain areas in a committee of one or two or whatever. So as he has done in the past, he wants to make sure we have good committee participation in addressing our challenge. So any other business come before the committee? If not, we're adjourned.